Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. One third of Americans over the age of 85 are affected by some form of dementia or Alzheimer's disease. One in nine Americans has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Many in the baby boomer generation believe that some form of dementia is just part of the aging process. But that's not necessarily the case. Joining us now is medical researcher and author of Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Dr. Neil Barnard, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
What do we know about how diet affects Alzheimer's risk?
Well, you know, the fact that it does is such a step forward. Perhaps 10 years ago, we couldn't have even had this conversation because the whole idea of Alzheimer's disease or dementia in general was that it's caused by getting older or it's caused by genetics, and neither of those things can you influence in any way. However, researchers have looked, and when you carefully track what people have for breakfast and lunch and dinner, and then over time you see who stays clear and who starts to lose their memory and who actually lapses into Alzheimer's, you do see these patterns. Much of this data comes out of a huge study in Chicago. There's a large New York study and some European studies as well. The big headline is that the bad fats, I'm talking about saturated fat, which we've known is bad for the heart, for example, or the trans fats in donuts, the big headline is that those fats are linked to Alzheimer's disease. The more of them you eat, the higher your risk. The degree of risk is about a multiplication factor of about three. In other words, if you're not eating those bad fats and then you compare yourself to somebody who is eating the bad fat, the person eating those bad fats has at least about three, four, five times the risk compared to you.
My guest is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the author of the book Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. If you have a question for Dr. Barnard, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So even if genetics are involved, what you eat can influence the impact of the genetic predisposition, right?
That's been the amazing thing, is that genes are not destiny. We learned this with diabetes. The old idea was, if you've got the diabetes gene, you'll get diabetes. Well, we then learned, first of all, that there are many different diabetes genes, and we also learned that if you eat in a certain way, if you stay physically active, if you eat in a healthful way, it doesn't especially matter if you have the gene or not. You're effectively turning that gene off. Researchers in Finland brought in about 1,000 adults, and they were 50 years old. Everyone was mentally clear, but they looked specifically at those who had a certain gene. It's called the APOE epsilon 4 allele. It's a gene that's tightly linked to Alzheimer's. And they tracked these people over two decades, and those people who tended to avoid the bad fats, especially the saturated fat that's in meat or dairy products, the people who avoided those had about 80% less risk of developing not just Alzheimer's, but developing the memory lapses of old age that can lead into Alzheimer's disease. So even if you have the gene, if you're following a healthy diet, and hopefully in the course of the show, it's not just avoiding the bad fats. There are plenty of good and protective foods as well. If you really plan your meals in a careful way, you can arm wrestle those genes into submission, it seems to me.
What is it about the bad fats that are linked to Alzheimer's disease? Is it the same sort of problem as, say, with your carotid arteries and your heart and so forth?
It's a $64,000 question. I have to say we are not 100% sure, but the biggest suspect we have does relate to cholesterol in the same way as a person who's eating saturated fat or trans fats, whether it's from dairy products or meat or chicken or any source, those fats will tend to raise cholesterol, and that in turn tends to raise the risk of heart problems. Researchers at Kaiser Permanente showed that the higher your cholesterol, the higher your risk of Alzheimer's disease, even if the cholesterol levels that they were looking at were drawn in midlife. If you look at your cholesterol when you're about 40 or 50, And then you look at the risk of Alzheimer's when you're 70 or 80, that you see this correlation. The higher the cholesterol, the higher the risk of Alzheimer's. What cholesterol seems to be doing is it seems to cause the brain cells to produce more of a protein that is linked to Alzheimer's, and it causes that protein to clump into what are called amyloid plaques. So we believe that the bad fats cause your body to make more cholesterol. In turn, the cholesterol causes this change in the brain.
We've heard about every perspective on saturated fat by now, that it's good for us, it's bad for us, it makes us fatter, it makes us thinner. The French eat it, the Japanese don't. Is there really any definitive research on brain health and fat when it comes to, I guess they call them, there's pockets in the world where they don't eat fat, and we see a much different outcome when it comes to Alzheimer's.
Oh, yes. And just to tackle head on the issue that you raised, earlier this year, there were a couple of studies that seemed to discount the effect of saturated fat on heart health. The idea was you can go ahead and eat bacon and fatty butter and that kind of thing, and you're going to be okay. Those studies were meta-analyses where they lumped all kinds of studies, good ones, bad ones, indifferent ones together, and it sort of washed out an effect which is quite real. I'd like to pretend that lard is not bad for your heart, but I hate to say it, you know, those bad fats are every bit as bad as we ever thought. With regard to the brain, we're talking about a whole different set of data, and there the numbers aren't entirely consistent, but they're pretty close, and it does look, the jury is maybe not quite back in the room, but all the indications that we have some very good data from this Chicago Health and Aging study, some good data out of New York, and a good Finnish study, suggesting that if you're avoiding the saturated fat, that's going to really be helpful to your brain. You mentioned about certain pockets around the world. We call them blue zones. This word goes back to people took a map, and they put in blue the places where there were the most 100-year-old people as a percentage of the population. For example, in Loma Linda, California, in part of Costa Rica, part of Greece, Sardinia, you see a lot of these. And what they all have in common is that they have plant-based dietary staples, so they are not eating burgers and unhealthy food to any substantial degree. And also they tend to be physically active, and they do the other things that you and I know are associated with health. It really does work if you plug them in.
You tell a good story about your own family, your own upbringing and food, and about your grandmother in particular and how she responded to the signs that diet made a difference. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I have to say I come from a pretty terrible family history. I really do. On my father's side of the family, we were all cattle ranchers as far back as I can go. And my dad did not like the cattle business. And after he grew up with it, he said, enough of this, boys, and he left. He went to medical school. He spent his life treating diabetes. But we very much ate like we were in the cattle business. On my mother's side of the family, both of my grandparents developed severe dementia. My mother's father developed it at about age 60. And it was very troublesome to everyone. And it begins slowly, where you're just sort of repeating the same stories, repeating the same jokes, but then it becomes every 10 minutes, and you realize this is not normal. This is really, really serious. And the big thing was my mother had a super high cholesterol, would not change her diet. Finally, she sees the doctor who threatens he's going to put her on drugs.
It was your mother.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're going to put her on statins to lower her cholesterol. My mother finally says, maybe I can do this with diet. Let me try. My mother starts a vegan diet. And 7 weeks later, she went back to the doctor. And the doctor said to her, Mrs. Barnard, I think I need to test your cholesterol again because there's something wrong with the lab equipment here. Her cholesterol had dropped 80 points, and he didn't think that was physically possible. He thought there was something wrong with the lab equipment, and he wanted to bring her back to get retested. Well, he did retest her, and her cholesterol had dropped so much that he said, I guess you don't really need medicine after all. It was all diet related.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a long time to convince my mother to to give a diet change a try.
And she stuck with it for a long time until, ironically, she and your father moved into a retirement assisted living situation, and it all went downhill from there.
My parents were never big complainers, and so they moved into this retirement facility where the idea was live it up. You know, nobody is we're not here to eat rabbit food. Let's have, you know, frankly, the most rich and unhealthful food. They went off their good diet, and my mother, I'm sorry to say, completely blocked off one of her carotid arteries, and she was found dead on the floor of her kitchen. Massive brain damage. And it's not just my family. It's we see this everywhere. Mm-hmm. This whole idea is we're not going to support older folks in eating in a more healthful way. People at any age want the best of health, and they just need to be supported in achieving it, and we can do that.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. More of this conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard still to come. But first, membership manager Rob Walker and All Sides producer Michael DeBonis are here for an update on our fall membership drive. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about what to eat for a healthy brain. My guest is medical researcher and author of Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory, Dr. Neil Barnard. Once again, welcome to the show, Dr. Barnard.
Thank you. Great to be with you today.
Let's talk about beef specifically, because even very lean cuts of beef are a problem when it comes to this diet. Why is that?
Well, we believe it's probably two things. The first is the saturated fat that we were talking about. When you eat that, it causes your body to make more cholesterol. And even the so-called lean cuts of beef really aren't anywhere near as lean as a serving of beans or vegetables or grains or fruits. Those foods have very, very, very little saturated fat, but beef has a fair amount. Beef also has cholesterol. And so the cholesterol that you eat adds to the cholesterol in your body, and although not as much as the effect of the saturated fat. However, as people are thinking, well, I'll order the chicken instead, I have to disappoint them a little bit too, because chicken is a little bit leaner than beef at its leanest, but still, if I take chicken breast and throw away the skin and you throw away all the dark meat, you don't add any fat, it's still almost one quarter fat as a percentage of its calories. So I make a big pitch for four really healthy food groups, and those would be grains, whole grains especially, beans, those forgotten powerhouses of protein, the bean group, also vegetables and fruits, which are vitamin rich. And that goes back to these blue zones, Costa Rica, in parts of Greece, Sardinia, and others where people live a really long time. Those foods are front and center on their plates, and the more we emphasize those, the better we're going to be. And there are some real standouts, particular vegetables or fruits that we might want to think about too. And hopefully in this show, I'll be able to make a pitch for those.
Well, let's talk about the standouts.
Okay. In Cincinnati, researchers wanted to test the effect of grapes on memory. And the reason is that researchers have known for some time that people who drink red wine seemed to get a little bit of benefit. They have less risk of developing Alzheimer's. Now, that's provided it's a rather modest amount, maybe a glass, maybe two, but not more than that. But on a regular basis, they seem to do better. However, we've all known that alcohol has risks too. So researchers in Cincinnati said basically, what if it's not the alcohol? What if it's the grape itself? So they tested not wine, but grape juice. Brought in a group of people, 78 years old on average. Everyone was already having memory problems. And here's what they did. They said, over the course of the day, drink a pint of grape juice, maybe a cup for breakfast, a cup for dinner, whatever. 3 months later, they tested their memory, and their memory was better, their recall was better substantially compared to a group given a placebo beverage. Why would that be? Well, if you think about it, a grape has a rough life. It's on the vine all day long under the hot, blazing sun. To protect itself, it has that intense purple color, which comes from from what are called anthocyanins, which are very powerful antioxidants. So the researchers said, if that's the explanation, let's test blueberries. And they tested them, exact same result. They seem to improve memory, even in people who are up, way up in years and are having significant memory problems. Over the, about a three-month time frame, they did better. So what I draw from this is that eating for color is a good idea because those colors are antioxidants. The purple anthocyanins in grapes or blueberries, the red lycopene in a tomato, the orange beta-carotene in carrots or sweet potatoes, to really bring those in. And secondly, you don't have to drink a pint of grape juice. It could be adding grapes to your salad, adding blueberries to your morning oatmeal. Just bring the colors in to the meals that you're consuming naturally, and you're going to get that antioxidant advantage. And the memory boost comes relatively quickly.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Dr. Neil Barnard. We're talking about his book, Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Let's talk about the three-step plan. One of the steps is, of course, diet, right?
Yeah. Food is where everything really gets started. And it's the two things. One is to get away from the things that we know are associated with memory problems. And the other is to bring in the things that can be helpful to us. So get away from the bad stuff, bring in the good stuff. The second part is strengthening the brain with mental exercise, also physical exercise. And the third is to be aware of memory threats, which are everywhere. But let me jump back into another good food, if you don't mind, real quick.
Sure.
If you look at the one place on Earth where you see the most people living to be 100 with good mental clarity, it's Okinawa, which, if you look at a map, is right at the very bottom of Japan. And the dietary staple in Okinawa, where this place where you see so many centenarians, it's not rice, it's not fish, it's sweet potatoes. And they eat enormous amounts of them. They grow them in their garden. They cook them in a million ways. If you go into the nearest grocery store and you slice open a sweet potato, you notice, A, it has zero bad fat. B, it is one of nature's most concentrated sources of antioxidants, beta-carotene. And you don't think about sweet potato fries or pureed sweet potato as really being a health food, but it is. And the complex carbohydrate that's in the sweet potato is very gradually absorbed. It's what we call a low glycemic index food, meaning it doesn't really spike your blood sugar very much. It just feeds the brain with the glucose it needs and gives you an enormous load of these very, very healthy beta-carotene molecules that will help the brain but help your health in many other ways too.
Now, when you say staple, this is something, actually, one of the people you write about in the book, she eats sweet potatoes every day.
Oh, yes. Yes. And they're very widely consumed. You know, it's not, I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota. And our idea of a diet was not blueberries or sweet potatoes. If you saw a sweet potato, that was something you'd have on the side. Well, there are great parts, large parts of the world where the plant staple, whether it's a root vegetable like sweet potato or rice or maybe quinoa in Latin America, where that is the meal. And these populations, in many cases, they eat no meat at all or eat very small amounts as sort of a flavoring, mm-hmm. the way you or I might use a pickle or something like that. And so that's what they're eating in enormous quantity day after day after day. It helps them stay slim. It dramatically changes their risk of heart disease. It really helps them in a good way. But the exciting thing now is that we can connect foods to brain health. And that's my message, is let's plug that in, because if we don't, the price is enormous. The personal cost that I've seen in my life and your listeners have seen in their lives, that's enormous. And the financial cost is just through the roof. You have to think about the kind of extraordinary skilled care that people need. It's bankrupting to our economy. But I come back to the personal cost. You don't want to break a family relationship. You don't want to not, your mother is there sitting in a chair, her heart is beating, but you can't talk to her because she doesn't remember you. She doesn't know who you are. That, for me as a doctor, that is what I want to stop. And I want grandparents to be able to play with their grandchildren. And if we take advantage of what we know about food, it's not a magic wand, but it's the most powerful thing we have.
Can we put food in a pill? Is it transferable in that way? A lot of people take supplements now to their diets. Is there something that we could do to put sweet potatoes in a pill, or is it all about the consumption of them in their natural form?
Believe me, people have tried. and in some cases you can. Vitamin B12 as a pill works great. In fact, it's the one supplement I encourage people to take. With beta carotene, no, it does not work. You can put it in a pill, but there are 600 carotenoids, cousins of beta carotene. If you take just beta carotene alone, it interferes with your absorption of the others. Same with vitamin E. Vitamin E comes in 8 forms in nature. If you take one and put it in a pill, which you can do, it will interfere with your absorption of the others. So when it comes to beta-carotene, get it from your carrots and sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. And the green vegetables have beta-carotene too. Not as much, but they've got it. And same with vitamin E. Food, not pills.
We have an email from Victoria. She asks, will raisins work as well as grapes? Grapes make me itch, but raisins don't.
Oh, there you go.
Good question.
Excellent question, and yes. What seems to count is that deep color. And that's why I was mentioning, even if it's not grapes, the blueberries seem to do it. Those are anthocyanins.
And if they're dried, like
right.
rice, okay.
Same story. You know, you look out your window. When you see the leaves turning in the fall, the plants are making anthocyanins, and they have, some of them are oranges, some of them are this deep purple color. Those are pigments that are strong antioxidants, and they are there even when they're dried.
Now, things like, you know, fruits have sugars in them. I was going to ask you this earlier when you were talking about the grape juice, because often it's frowned upon because of all the sugar in grape juice now. Is that a problem?
If it's sugar that came from the fruit, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. An apple or a banana or a pear or a grape, they have natural sugars. And sugar has gotten such a bad rap recently. But we have to keep in mind, your brain runs on sugar. Your brain runs on glucose. Your muscles run on glucose. Your body runs on glucose in the same way as your car runs on gasoline. This doesn't mean that you need to add a whole lot of extra table sugar to things and be eating beyond what the body needs. But those natural sugars from fruits are good. And the day we start saying that an apple is bad for kids, we've really kind of gone off the deep end. We have to think about those sugars as being what fuels our body processes in a natural way.
If you have a question or comment for Dr. Barnard, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of my conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard is still to come. But first, here's All Sides producer Michael DeBonis and membership manager Rob Walker to talk about supporting 89.7 NPR News right now. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the author of the book Power Foods for the Brain, an effective 3-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your body. It includes lots of recipes and lots of ideas for how to sort of change the way you approach what you eat to give your brain a little bit of a chance to avoid something that a lot of people take for granted in old age, and that's dementia. Earlier this year, your organization, Dr. Barnard Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, published 7 guidelines to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. Why the timing? How did you pick the 7?
Yes. We held the International Conference on Nutrition and the Brain. And so we brought in the world's leading experts on that topic, on how nutrition could affect the brain. And we asked them to to give the advice that they would give if a patient came in to see them and said, I know we're all at risk, what can I do to protect myself? And they came up with 6 guidelines that related mostly to food but also to physical activity. And they're all, the good news is that they're all very practical things that anybody can do. And if you'd like, I'd be happy to walk you through them.
Sure.
Okay, number one, we were talking earlier about the bad fats. And so guideline one is minimize your intake of saturated fat and trans fats. And dairy is the biggest source of saturated fat, but it's also in meats and some oils like coconut oil and palm oil. And we encourage people to really minimize those. Number two, the flip side, eat plant-based foods, so vegetables and the legume group, which is the bean group, beans, peas, lentils, fruits, whole grains. They should really be our main staples. For vitamin E, we are encouraging people to get vitamin E from foods, and the healthful sources are seeds, nuts, also green leafy vegetables, some in whole grains as well. Number four, a B12 supplement. It's in every multiple vitamin you ever took, but you can also get just B12 itself. And if your body runs low in B12, as it does for many people, the brain does not stay healthy. Number five, when you're choosing a multiple vitamin, look on the label and choose those that do not have added iron or added copper, because these are metals that you get in foods, but if you're adding too much, they do seem to end up in the brain and seem to contribute to Alzheimer's risk. Number six is a controversial one, aluminum. Some people think aluminum is safe, but a number of neurologists feel that it increases Alzheimer's risk. So we are encouraging people to avoid aluminum cookware unless it is coated where the food would touch it. When you're picking baking powder or other products, get the aluminum-free ones. And number seven, exercise, 2 hours per week. So that should be aerobic exercise, could be maybe a 40-minute brisk walk 3 times a week. That'll do it. But this is not a trudge. This is not super slow, but it should not be so fast that you cannot talk. So a good brisk walk, 40 minutes, 3 times a week. At the University of Illinois, researchers showed that actually reduces brain shrinkage. It actually seems to counteract it and pump up the parts of the brain that are involved in memory. So lace up your sneakers.
Is the exercise part because you're pumping up the blood flow? Do we know why that helps the brain?
We don't know why. We just know that it happens. They brought in 120 adults. They were all up in years, had some memory deficits, and they increased them. They started 10 minutes a day, 3 times a week, and then they went to 15, then 20, then 25 minutes of brisk walking. When they got up to 40, they stayed there, and a year later, everyone had a brain scan, and the part of the brain called the hippocampus that is key to memory had stopped shrinking, and it was actually sort of being, if I can say it this way, being pumped back up. And then on formal testing, their memories were actually better. We presume that it's what you said, Ann, that you're getting better blood flow, mm-hmm. better nutrients in, and you're able to flush the wastes out more effectively than if you're absolutely sedentary.
You know, one of the biggest breakthroughs in the last decade or so is the realization that the brain can repair itself, that we're not stuck with, you know, like we grew up with the brain we've gotten, and any damage we've done is can't be undone or can't be affected in any way. The brain plasticity idea.
Yes, that's right. And that has led people to suggest that we should do more than physical exercise, that we should give your brain something to do, which, by the way, let me say this is one of the reasons why I love NPR, because you're giving the brain something to do, and you're giving yourself new thoughts, and that will allow us. You're not going to build a new brain cell for the mm-hmm. most part, but what you'll do is you'll strengthen connections. The bridges between the cells are being strengthened and made more resilient. And researchers in Canada years ago noticed that people who were bilingual were less likely to fall into dementia compared to people who had only one language. And the thought was, you have so much more vocabulary, you're using so many more little intellectual fragments, if I can put it that way, more words, more expressions, that it seemed to defer brain aging. You don't have to learn another language, although that's a good thing to do. But the more you learn about anything, the better you are going to be. But the key is not just to have learned it. What really matters is, are you using it now? So if you have a language that you're using, if you have new facts, new things that you've heard on the radio on a program like this, and you're sharing them with other people, well, that's a nice thing to do, but it also is exercising your brain every step of the way.
We have an email from Gwen going back to the issue of B12, and she asks, can you recommend a B12 supplement? My blood work shows that it is low, and B12 shots are recommended.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's great that you got tested. Many, many people are running low in vitamin B12, and the reason that matters is that this is a vitamin that you need in tiny amounts. The amount you need is 2.4 micrograms. That's the recommended daily allowance for adults. And you need it for healthy nerves, including healthy brain function, as well as healthy blood cells. Those are the two big things that B12 does. Lots of people run low. For one reason, you need stomach acid to pull B12 out of foods, and many people don't have much stomach acid, particularly after age 50, or maybe you're on an antacid. Second, some medications cause people to run low in B12, like metformin, which everyone listening to this program who has diabetes, they know about metformin. It's the most common diabetes drug. It interferes with B12 absorption. So your doctor is right. The doctor can give you a monthly injection. However, some of the newer studies say if you take enough of an oral dose, it's as good as an injection. So the injections are perfectly fine. They work. They're great. But when people take an oral dose, oh, it might be as high as perhaps 2,000 micrograms, you take it every day. Some of the research studies say that that's as good as an injection. Now, be guided by your own doctor's recommendation, and your doctor knows what he or she is doing. But the oral doses do seem to be effective. And for a person who is not deficient, the amount you need is just 2.4 micrograms a day. So it's in every multiple vitamin. It is in just the B12 supplements themselves. It doesn't really matter what brand or what form or even what dose, because they're all over 2.4 micrograms. The only exception is if you're deficient, there you need a higher dose to make up for lost time.
And is there a time of the day you should take it? Should you take it with food, anything like that?
Oh, great questions. And the short answer is it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And some of the labels will say it's sublingual. There's even one that you shoot into your nose. You don't have to do that. If the one that's sublingual, if you can put it under your tongue, but you can also swallow it. The absorption is fine either way.
You also recommend getting vitamin E from food sources rather than supplements.
Yes.
A lot of people take vitamin E in supplements, though. Is it the absorption issue again?
It's there are eight different forms that vitamin E comes in nature. So if you eat almonds or sunflower seeds, the nuts and the seeds are a very rich source. You will get a whole variety, the variety that nature had in mind and that our bodies evolved along with, taking that out of the food and pulling the vitamin E into our bodies. However, if you're a manufacturer, you can take one form of vitamin E, put it in a pill, put a label on it. And if a person takes that, they're getting way too much of just that one form, and that causes the body to shut down its absorption of the other forms of vitamin E. So in the Chicago Health and Aging Project, those people who got the most vitamin E from foods cut their Alzheimer's risk by more than 50%. But that's vitamin E from food. If you look at vitamin E from a supplement, it doesn't have that effect. So at least according to the best data we have. So get it from foods. And here's my tip, by the way. Let's say you're putting some sunflower seeds on your salad. Pour them into your hand. By the time that touches your fingers, that is more than you need. That's more than an ounce. So put it in your hand. Once it hits your fingers, that's more than an ounce. And then don't shove it in your mouth. Just use it as a flavoring on your salad. That will keep you from overdoing it on cashews and almonds and all these tasty things. So use them as an ingredient, and you're going to do fine.
You know how people think, don't you, Dr. Bernard?
I've been there myself. I crack open the cashews bag, and pretty soon it's empty. You know, that's more than you need.
Are you seeing any kind of adaptation to this regimen in places where there are specialty units for Alzheimer's patients?
Are people putting the nutritional approach to work for Alzheimer's patients?
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
Doesn't that bug you?
Yes. Well, part of it I understand. If the Alzheimer's process has gone on too long, I really think that diet changes are going to help very little.
Okay.
I'm talking about it where the brain has really been damaged. Having said that, the most exciting part is where you're looking at people where they are starting to have memory issues. You know, and I don't just mean once a week, which we all have. I mean several times a day. This is called mild cognitive impairment. It's a stepping stone to Alzheimer's. And in those people, if you get them exercising, if you get them eating in a healthy way, we have the expectation that they will improve. Now, we do need more research here, but I would say run, do not walk, to getting a healthy diet. Get the junk out of your diet and get your exercise going. And I think those are people who you can help enormously. And let's face it, we don't have a whole lot else. The medications are disappointing for Alzheimer's. Let's use diet and lifestyle. It's our best tool, we believe.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I want to say thanks to Dr. Neil Barnard for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Ann. It's been great talking with you.
And now with more information on how you can support our station, here's membership manager Rob Walker and All Sides with Ann Fisher producer Michael DeBonis.